Hello and welcome to the Holistic Homes Podcast. I'm so excited to be sharing today's episode with you. We have a very special guest, Megan Carson. You may know her on Instagram as The Guided Well. She is an IEP, an indoor environmental professional. So she is sharing all things indoor air quality, water damage, and how to navigate all of that with a professional. She's not only sharing her perspective as an IEP, but also as somebody who's gone through it herself. She shares her journey of having mold exposure as a child all the way through her adult years and how she's navigated all of that as being a renter and what she's done along the way to end up now in a healthy home that she's having success in. So I'm so excited to share all of the tips and wisdom that she drops during this episode. So by the end of it, I'm hoping that you will be feeling much more empowered in your own journey if you find yourself in a similar situation with water damage or having mold exposure in a rental or in your own personal home. So let's get into it. Welcome everyone to today's episode. I have an incredible guest. I'm personally so excited about this to have another female on the podcast in what is such a male-dominated industry. Megan and I are here today to share all things mold and healthy building. That's why we're here. We want to know what to look for, questions to be asking contractors or mold inspectors, and what we can do as homeowners to feel empowered in this whole space of building or renovating a home. And not just rely on what our contractors or maybe inspectors are telling us we should do. So you're going to get empowered today. You're going to hear from two ladies that know what they're talking about. And I'm so excited to introduce Megan Carson. You may know her as the founder of The Guided Well. She is on Instagram, but she is also a certified mold inspector and IEP. So welcome, Megan. Thank you for being
here. Thanks, Christine, for having me. I'm really excited.
For so many of us, our journey into this space began in our own kind of catastrophe of a moldy home. I know that was my experience. Is that kind of what got you interested in building healthier homes and being involved in that process? Do you have a story of when things went south for you?
I do. And man, do I. Really, it's my origin story in so many ways. Looking back, I was raised in flood-damaged homes. I was a really sickly kid. I had classic PANS PANDAS that at the time didn't have a diagnostic criteria. I had recurring sinusitis, bronchitis, strep throat. All things now that I know are really correlated to building related illness. And that traveled with me up until I was about 21, until I left home. And then suddenly I started to do really well. And again, hindsight is 20/20. I can actually look back on my timeline and see kind of these peaks and valleys dependent on the environment I was in. And ultimately what led me here was kind of the crest of all of that and what recontextualized my whole life and understanding about the built world and our homes was in 2021 when I got really ill from my townhouse. And it was a really severe situation. Like many, I think 2020 was a blessing and a curse in that some people got better because they were taken out of environments that were sick, like their workplaces, and others were trapped in their house that had major problems. And unfortunately, that was me. So starting from really March of 2020, month over month over month, I was accruing diagnosis after diagnosis. And again, that came to a head in early 2021. And really, Instagram, this platform that we connected on, was my gateway to questioning if my home was the issue. And that led me down this path. And it became something that, you know, is my passion. And I just, 4 years ago, I couldn't imagine doing this. And now I can't imagine doing anything else.
Oh, wow. Okay. So when you left, when you were 21 and started feeling better, you didn't connect the dots then.
I had no idea. thought that you were maybe growing out of it or healing. So you had no idea of kind of what this history has played a role in your health until 2021.
Correct. Yeah.
Wow.
And wow, is it
and
an awakening in so many ways.
Oh my gosh. And the times that you look back of like, okay, that makes sense. Okay. And then that instance or that home. Yes. And sometimes people don't understand, like, right in that home in 2020, you may have thought like, this is the home that's making me so sick. But in reality, it's really an accumulation from early childhood. So it's not always the home that you're in when you're most sick that is causing the most damage per se. It could have been this childhood home or the sorority house or all of these little moves along the way. So what a blessing that it all came to light in 2020. What a difficult year that was to tack that on top of everything else that was going on. Okay. So in 2020, you connected the dots, kind of started to feel sicker as you're in your home more. And then 2021, what happened next?
So it's really interesting. And I think I'm just going to talk on this because I think it's a lot of people's story. I had this really deep intuition and feeling that something was going on in the home for months before we actually found out and had validation. I would have my fiance, who's now my husband at the time, look at least once a week for mold, for some sign that was visible that I could say, this is it. And unfortunately, he never found anything. And why I bring that up is because that's so common. A lot of people think you have to see or smell mold to have an issue. And I can tell you personally and professionally that that's just not the case.
That's so true. And so that happened to in my story as well. It was not visible. Mm-hmm. It was not visible because it was in a kitchen. And so we had the tile, we had the cabinets. And then once all of that came down and the drywall came down, it was floor to ceiling. Like there was not a dry spot in sight, but I would have never discovered that if I wasn't already planning to renovate this kitchen, which that's not always the case. People, especially now today with the housing market, people are not anticipating to always purchase a home and then demolish it or take it down to the studs. There's a lot of people that are buying homes, doing their due diligence, doing their inspection, doing all of the things that, you know, they feel is the right path to take to get a healthy home. And still, there are things that can be hidden. So once you went down this path and were checking everything, was it a mold inspection or how did you find what the root cause issue was?
So I initially did an ERMI, which, you know, at the time, full transparency, I had no idea how to interpret it. I interpreted it completely incorrectly, but it was bad enough that even that was metrically significant. And then, yes, we had a mold inspector come in and a hidden leak was found from our third story shower into a closet. So if you looked in the closet like this and opened the door, nothing. You had to turn this way. It was right at where the framing, the door frame met the top.
Above the door.
Yes. So, and it was also in our HVAC unit. It was a 1990s build. The HVAC was not well cared for, unfortunately, and it was scoped and had a really major problem. And this is the interesting thing is I lived in this house from 2018 to 2021. So the problem was there, at least in the HVAC from the beginning, but we had such a different time experience in there. I was working out of the home. I was traveling up to 40% of the year. So it wasn't really until COVID again that I was spending this excessive amount of time in the home that it really started to affect me and my husband. And both of us were definitely impacted. But yeah, it wasn't until we had the mold inspection that it was really hit home to us how significant the problem was.
Wow. Okay. So then, continuing on with your story, because you're right. This is so relatable. This is so many people's stories. And a lot of them do line up with 2020 when they were home more, or maybe they were in their office or workplace more. Like and not realizing that their environment was causing them to feel so ill. So after you discovered the water damage above the door frame in the closet, you had the mold inspection. Did you then move on to remediation, or like for the HVAC, did you remove all of that and remove all the ducting?
Great question. So we were actually renting, and in many ways that was a blessing because I, at that time, was so, I was, again, there's always a spectrum of building-related illness and mold toxicity, but I was definitely, by the time I left, on that severe spectrum. And I truly, looking back, don't know how we would have gone through remediation process that I'm sure we'll get into, how fraught and how many, you know, side roads you can take there. But we luckily were able to exit out of our lease, really with the information we had that we turned over. They let us out free and clear, which isn't always the case. Mm. And now just a side note for that, always, always contract your own inspection, especially in rentals. If your landlord, for instance, contracts the mold inspection, they own it. They do not have to disclose information to you.
Yes.
And I want to say this too. I got really lucky in that I serendipitously did these things correctly, if you will. If you've been down this journey, you know there are so many pitfalls. There are pitfalls in inspection. We were really lucky that this inspector didn't just come in and take an air sample in the middle of the room on each level and say everything was fine. He did a really thorough inspection and wall and cavity samples. And so that was great. And then we also didn't rely on the landlord to assess the problem. We kind of took it into our own hand. Mm-hmm. And again, in hindsight, that was just the right thing to do. And we were so lucky that we did it that way and that it ended up that way. And I can't stress enough how important it is to contract your own inspections. So you own that information. And so you have a way to, I don't want to say bargain, but so you have the power and the data to go to your landlord if you're in a rental situation to say, listen, this is what we found. And then you go from there, yes, to make decisions.
That is so true. Having the data, because when you have this type of situation, I reiterate, document, document, document every step. Document the visible mold, document the moisture meter, document everything that's in your possession. But a caveat, and maybe some listeners are feeling this, here in California, I have seen more and more where California is not the best state to rent anything in, but I have seen more and more lease agreements that do not allow any third-party inspections or work on a property. So read your lease, read your agreement, read through that really thoroughly to see, just as a safeguard, like maybe you are coming from a previous water damage rental, moving into another one. Read the lease and make sure that you do have that right to do testing. God forbid something does come up and you need to do that testing. So I can't emphasize that enough, but definitely read through your lease, because you want to be in this position that Megan's talking about, where you can do a mold inspection. You can do an ERMI test if you wanted to do that yourself, and you have this flexibility so that you can have the data.
It's really important. And I mean, to me, that also underscores and stresses how widespread this issue is, right? That landlords are putting this into clauses because they know what a big deal mold and microbial issues are in homes, and that they lose bargaining power and give away some of their power as a landlord when they allow testing with the tenant.
Yes. Okay. So you broke the lease, you were able to leave, and then you found a clean rental. You were able to move into another home.
So we were able to find a rental. Now, this is really also the impetus to getting into this. So we ended up looking at 20, 25 rentals. All had very visible water damage. Some had visible molds, and were just, you know, not places where I felt I could heal. And I think many people fall into this pitfall too, where you think, oh, with a new place, you're not going to have any problem. So we ended up in a 2020 build multifamily apartment. And within 2 weeks, water was coming through our master bedroom window.
Oh my goodness.
And as you can imagine, I was just devastated and couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that I ended up in another place where there was overt water damage and that, again, I was in a situation that I didn't have full control to take care of the water event. Now, again, I got very lucky in that I was very transparent with the ownership and company at the time. Now they've switched ownership. But at the time, I told them where I was coming from, you know, my biggest concerns. They even let me put a few clauses in the lease that I had an immediate out if certain things happened. But they actually
emphasized that point. What Megan did there. Did everyone hear that? Megan, you put additional clauses in the contract. You hand wrote it, you added it, and they signed it.
Correct.
Don't be afraid to ask to do
Never
that
be afraid to
on
ask.
Your lease.
Never. And you'll be surprised what people are willing to include. And again, I got very lucky with that. And so I actually didn't end up breaking the lease. They were actually also very amenable to my recommendations on how to handle it. So we fully contained it. We ripped out all the drywall. Now, what's interesting is that the flashing was done incorrectly, but it was done incorrectly on the whole south side of the building. So this was not just happening to my unit. This was happening to all units. And unfortunately, even though it was very much illuminated when this happened to me and mine, when we were occupied and we were, I think, part of the first 30 people to occupy the building, they did not reflash the entire south side of the building until a year and a half later. But they did reflash my window, which I insisted on, or I said, you know, I can't stay here. So that really made me think, though, number one, why are so many buildings having these issues, right? And this really underscored to me that new buildings were not excluded from that. They have a different set of vetting criteria, but they need to be vetted just as well as an existing or older home to ensure that the building can be healthy and can remain healthy. So there are lessons in all of it. You know, I wouldn't really wish it on anyone and I never expected it, but it led me here and it opened up a world of curiosity. And ultimately, my biggest passion now is figuring out with clients why buildings are failing, why they've had three inspectors, whether that's general home, whether that's mold, whether that's structural in their home or townhouse or whatever, and they're still having problems, and why they've had two remediations and they're still getting microbial issues. And that seems to be the missing piece to me in this industry that, you know, even if you get a great inspector, which is awesome, even if you get a great remediator and you're not taking care of the root issue of why the problem's occurring, and sometimes it's just maintenance. Sometimes it's just, you know, a localized issue like a pipe burst, but sometimes it's the enclosure and structure itself. And if that's not taken care of, unfortunately, we do see recurrence. And that's my biggest mission to prevent that.
Yes. Yes. Because it is not only a huge financial undertaking to go through testing, inspecting, removal, rebuild, like that whole process can be really financially devastating. But then for it to not be successful is heartbreaking for so many. And we've got to find a solution to make it more successful. And if there could be some sort of magical checklist or something that would increase the odds of it being successful, I think would be so helpful, which I'm hoping that we can share some like nuggets of wisdom here today of anyone who is going down the path of mold inspection and remediation, like maybe some red flags they can look for, things that they should be talking to the inspection and remediation company about. Do you have anything that comes to mind of like the number one most important thing that people should be starting off with when they're about to enter the space of tackling a remediation?
First of all, make sure you have good testing and validation before remediation, right? And now sometimes too, if you have a very overt issue, I'm okay. And I certainly advise clients where in certain circumstances where, you know, you can do exploratory remediation and demo, and that might save you on the front end with inspection. But generally, I want a really high level inspection that's all encompassing. So briefly getting into inspection, you know, always vetting the mold inspector who's coming out, asking about their process. How long are they going to spend in your home? Where do they inspect? Because if they don't inspect your basement, crawl space, or attic, where we know preferentially a lot of issues occur due to, you know, various reasons, there stands to be a lot missed. So I would ask again where they're inspecting, how long their inspection is. If it's 45 minutes, even an hour, that's just not enough. Ask what samples they take. Are they just doing air samples in the middle of a room and those are their validation tests and that's all that they rely on? Generally, I like to see things like surface samples or cavity samples, especially to validate if they suspect something either is microbial growth that they want to validate. So you would take either a swab or a tape lift sample of that, or in a cavity that, you know, maybe it's behind a shower in a closet that you think there might be a problem with that shower, that you can take a cavity sample to see. That's important. But really a sampling plan that's not just ambient air samples in the middle of a room is really what you're hoping
yes.
for. I really like people who come with a robust set of tools, right? Like moisture meters are a prerequisite. If they're not coming with a moisture meter, they're not worth their salt. But now we also have infrared cameras, and I find those really, really valuable. Now, they are not diagnostic in any way, meaning they just because you see an anomaly on the infrared camera doesn't mean you can assume that there's water, but then you can validate with something like a moisture meter. Or you can do other exploratory investigation if it's warranted based on that infrared thermal scan. And that's non-invasive. So, I mean, truly, I think every mold inspector, boots on the ground, should be using infrared cameras. It's such a great tool.
100%. Yeah. I think that what you're emphasizing is so important because the fear just takes over you when you, like you went in the closet, looked above the door, and you saw that it was wet. It's like an immediate reaction. Called a mold inspector, get them there as quickly as possible. Rush, rush, rush. You want to get this handled. And I totally understand that feeling. But to the point of what you're saying, the most important part is that testing and really hiring someone who's going to come out and do that testing. They better be really, really thorough, because the remediation is only going to occur based off of the test, the results. So they're going to focus on that one or two areas. But if your mold inspector is not also swabbing the air handler or the ductwork or other areas of the home, that's going to get missed. And it's not always on part of the remediation company. It's because there wasn't a thorough inspection to guide them where to remediate. So don't rush the process. Have a really good set of questions, like what Megan's suggesting, the tools, how long is the inspection, what mold tools are they using, what samples are they collecting. Like, ask a really thorough set of questions and then make your decision and schedule the inspection. I know here locally, we have some really wonderful inspectors.
Amazing.
But they are booked out 4 to 8 weeks to even get out there. And, you know, the feedback that I get is like, I want to use this mold inspector, but oh my goodness, I can't just sit and wait for 6 or 8 weeks, which I get. So I know people will rush the process, not always on part of them wanting to, but just because there's not enough resources of high quality inspectors.
And again, that underscores how big of a problem this is, right? If these inspectors are booked out this far and are in such high demand, and as people become more aware, they are starting to vet and vet well for these inspectors, and they are finding these good inspectors, which is great, but we need more. We absolutely need more.
Yes.
And again, my hope is that as awareness continues to be raised, that there will be more people entering into the industry. And not only that, people in the industry open to learning, open to expanding their education on maybe what they thought they knew or what they thought was a good inspection versus what we find really is a good inspection. I have clients who yes. give me the inspection notes and it's a page, a 3,000 square foot home. And then it's another page with the air sample. And it's just not sufficient. There's no way you can get the data you need from a report like that or from somebody who's doing an inspection that surface level.
Yes. Okay. So everyone is going to thoroughly vet their inspector yes. first before they let them in the door to give them a thorough evaluation. Then from there, what should they be looking for on the remediation side of things? Because if that inspector is not also exploring what the potential root cause is, like if there's water damage in a closet, okay, great, we can remediate that, but why is it there in the closet? There has to be some exploratory phase in all of this as well. So to me, that comes either hand in hand with the inspection or secondarily after the inspection before the remediation ever happens. You have to know what the root cause is, correct that, and then hop into the remediation. How do you feel about that? Do you think that lines up or is there another kind of sequence that you prefer?
I think that that really lines up. And I love that you said, I like when things are open too, like having your trusted contractor or somebody else come in to really get further information with cavities open on, are we sure this is why this issue occurred, right? Like we thought it was just from a pipe leak, but is it because the entire bathroom fluid applied membrane has broken down because it's 25 years old? And mm-hmm. that again prevents on the back end where in 1 to 5 years, you know, you're having the same or a similar issue. And again, I understand budget. Sometimes these things are not able to be done all at once and that's okay. But I'm always one to believe and kind of preach that knowledge is power and knowing what your set of issues are is better than not knowing. So I, for your first question, remediation, what are we looking for and who are we looking for? Ideally, your mold inspector is writing a report for your remediator to follow, meaning just like we talked about, they're kind of writing the roadmap. This is where we found microbial growth. This is the general location and diameter we expect or, you know, that we visually saw. And these are the areas to focus on, right? So that is what your remediator is then using as their roadmap. So number one, hopefully you have a great report that's going to be given to your remediator so they know what to do and what they're up against and kind of where to focus, right? So when you're vetting remediation companies, I want to make something really clear too, that restoration is not remediation. And a lot of restoration companies get grouped into remediation. And a lot of people think that if somebody has a restoration title, that they're a remediator. And now some restoration companies can have remediation services and do them well, but it's not a one for one. And one does not equal the other. So a remediator is really there to remove these source areas that either you're visually seeing and know you need removed or that your inspector has found and flagged. And now there are general standards too that you always remove 2 feet out. I like more of 4 feet out from an affected area yes. and things like that. So that's a great question to ask. You know, do you follow IICRC S520 remediation standards? That's a great opening question because that's in their standard, at least a minimum of 2 feet out from the area that's been designated as holding microbial growth. Ask about their contract. Thoroughly review their contract. What are they promising yes. you? What materials are they using? And how do they plan to fully remediate? And that looks very, very different from company to company. For some, they will have no removal of materials. Their whole remediation mm-hmm. is using things like fogs and fogging machines or just abrasive techniques or other applications like encapsulation. And they have no plan to remove the source area. And I can't stress enough that anytime you're having remediation done, you need to remove the source area that's been validated as having microbial growth, or that visually when they start going into that material that they're seeing. And again, keep going at least 2 feet out from either a validated area or visually clean area.
Yes. As a contractor, I often use the analogy of in a bathroom, a tub surround a shower, there can be, you know, water damage and mold growth on the lumber. Is it going to be more cost effective to remove the $4 2x4 sand it, treat it, wire brush it, HEPA vacuum, and then encapsulate it? Sometimes things just don't add up for me, but to me, the best form of remediation is removal. Because then there's less of a concern of, did we get it all? Did we remove it all? Is it going to grow back? Is now the structural integrity compromised? Like, it's a 2x4. It's a 2x6. Like, replace it. Get something that's clean and dry and replace it. Now, it's not that easy, but...
And sometimes there are things that just may not make sense to remove. And that's okay. But knowing again that just because you can't remove it doesn't mean you should just encapsulate it as opposed to still treat it. And that could be with things like a higher percentage hydrogen peroxide to pull that hyphae out of something like a wood substrate and then sand it.
Mm.
That would be my preference. Really, in my opinion, encapsulation is a last resort.
Let's talk about that. It's one of my biggest pet peeves. If I go into a home and it's down to the studs and everything is white,
it makes my blood boil.
I just can't handle it. Like framing, construction material, framing is not designed to be encapsulated. It is designed to absorb and release certain amounts of moisture. That is how we have been building homes for hundreds of years. And when we are going into existing homes, especially, like I've seen 60, 70, 80-year-old homes with old growth lumber, and they've gone in and encapsulated all of the framing, you cannot undo encapsulation. It is permanent. Now, there is a lifespan. I know some of them have like a warranty of 5-8 years, something like that, to where then they say you need to reapply it, which no one is doing that.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay. So my blood is boiling at this point, just talking about it. But that's something that needs to be emphasized. If they're going to come in and remediate and then their final step is encapsulating the framing, what is the warranty on the encapsulating material? You should be reading the technical specs of that encapsulating paint. And in there, you will see there will be a lifespan or a warranty, maybe 5 years, 8 years. What happens after that time? It will likely say that it needs to be reapplied. Truth is, nobody's doing that because you then need to remove all of your drywall again and basically do another gut renovation. So,
excellent point.
Before I say something that I'm going to regret, can you share your thoughts on this whole, truthfully, overuse of encapsulating as a remediation technique?
You nailed it. I mean, it is a Band-Aid at best. And like you touched on, and not many people touch on this, you know, wood is hygroscopic, right? It holds and releases moisture depending on the ambient conditions it's in. But what also happens when we're putting a 0 to 1 perm rating on an exterior wall encapsulant that is a vapor open wall assembly? You've completely changed the dynamic of that wall's ability to breathe. So we're not just talking about wood. We're talking about the vapor transference of exterior to interior. And that has unintended consequences. That can be microbial in nature, unfortunately. So it's a poorly thought out solution. And in many cases, and it's a last resort solution in some, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is rare. A very rare instance that an entire home would need to be encapsulated. I would love to say never, but I can't say never.
It's very rare that is the only technique that will lead to a healthy home. Okay. And I know we were getting a little bit technical there, but Megan, what you're talking about is the ability for the exterior, the building envelope to breathe. So when we have these older homes that were, I love when they say the term a leaky home. Yes, older homes are leaky. They're breathing through the building envelope and the building paper and your stucco, whatever you have there. If we then alter how that home is designed to breathe, meaning that we are then taking all of that exterior framing along the exterior walls, encapsulating it so it can no longer absorb and release moisture. And then we are upgrading the exterior sheathing to something that's going to be vapor closed rather, then we've completely altered the way that this home is functioning. And we don't know what that's going to lead to once you close it all back up and put in your beautiful finishes, because now we've altered that home. So I just say often, I really think that there needs to be an emphasis on working with what you have, working with the type of home that you have. Because in that instance, just like you mentioned, if you take this 1950s home that has no vapor barrier under the slab, and now you've taken those leaky walls, you've encapsulated the framing, and you've put up something that's no longer vapor open. Well, to me, is that going to make the slab pull up more moisture? We don't know. So every step needs to be thought through. I know that we went on a technical tangent there, but it's important to share that kind of information and that you can have these conversations with your whole team. So if something feels extreme, I think that should be cause for a pause and further investigate and research more to make sure that what you're doing, especially when it is a permanent application like encapsulating, that you are well informed of the pros and the cons.
And if your remediator is proposing that, they should be able to have this conversation with you.
Yes.
It shouldn't just be, this is what you need to do, this is what we offer, no conversation around it. And if they're unaware of even the safety data sheet on these encapsulants or this is a direct example of a problem I had with a specific client of the remediator didn't even know the PERM rating of the encapsulant they were using. And they not only put it on framing, they put it on the back of the sheathing of a Tyvek vapor open home. And I brought this to them and it was something that they had never considered. And that to me is just unacceptable because again, you're trading one problem for potentially another. So
yes,
everything needs to be thought out. And sometimes, again, you need to rely on people who have this information, like consultants who can help bring those things to your attention that, again, maybe your remediators isn't malintended or doesn't mean harm, but can bring that to the consumer, to the homeowner to say, these are questions I would ask. Let's see what they say. Let's give my opinion, and then you can make the best decision for your home.
That's so important. And an aspect to that, finding a consultant, it could be anybody that you connect with, but having a consultant on your team is so important. Also from a perspective of that consultant likely does not have any financial interest in your project. They're not concerned about what encapsulating method you use, if you remove material or not. Like having a third party, somebody that can just help you ask the right questions or bounce questions off of and help you navigate this space where it can feel really just like such a big undertaking when you have the contractor who has a financial interest in the amount of work that you do. You have the remediation company who's got a financial interest in the amount of remediation that you do. It can be a really big money grab. And
And that's why some people don't want to use a consultant, right? But I think what we're trying to hit home here is that in the long run, it could save you money. And often it does, at least in my experience, because we're thinking out these things before we're acting and before doing things that we either can't undo, like encapsulants, or things that we have to redo in the future because they were not well thought out or done incorrectly in the first place.
Thank you for that. So I want to shift gears a little bit to some of the fun
stuff.
This is not meant to be a downer episode, just informative. We are here to be informative. So we're going to talk about some positive stuff now. Okay. The inspection is done. The remediation is done. Everything is looking impeccable and we're going to start rebuilding. I know that you have a love for building science, which is so important in building a healthy home today. I want to know about some of the materials that you really love working with. Some strategies that you've seen maybe on the rebuild side of things, like share us your knowledge and building science and just some great assets and resources that you might have.
Sure. So, I mean, like you often talk about, which I love, is that it's so individual, right? It's the home that your customer and client has. It's always an N of one. Right. So a client that has a older leaky home, as you say, like a, you know, 1950s, 1960s home versus a client who has a 2021 build is going to look very different because the whole dynamics of the building are different. The building performs different. And that's actually what I realized was so interesting about this and how the science applies to older buildings. Newer buildings and how we put that all together for the clients to really help them make the best decisions for the home that they have. I think the mechanical systems are the biggest part of a healthy home. And in many ways, right? They're the lungs of the home and they really, especially in newer homes, mechanical and ventilation systems are probably one of the biggest decisions you have to make in terms of that strategy and implementation. And how your building is going to perform. But even on the flip side, in older homes, mechanical upgrades, things like that, when you're in the process of doing these things, again, they have different potential consequences or pluses that should be considered as well. That's not really super building science-y. If you have a more specific question, I'd love to. But it's so broad,
okay.
Right? You know?
It is. I know. I get the question all the time. So I like to ask if to see how broad of a net we can cast. But you're right. Like you really can't nail down. Like, for example, there's some really wonderful window flashing details or fluid applied flashing details, but it's not going to work or apply to every project. So it is a bit more nuanced. But
even changing windows in an older home, right? And changing that dynamic. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, there are so many great products. And I mean, there are so many great product lines. And I, you know, the biggest thing that I say about that, though, is that you can have the best product on the market, but if it's not applied per manufacturer's instructions in the correct way, it may not perform and it may not do what you want it to do. Right. So
yes,
that's a big part of it as well.
I do get asked, I'm sure you do too, even just about like, what is the best bathroom waterproofing? What is the best exterior sheathing? What is the
insulation.
Best fill in the blank? And my answer most of the time is two parts. One being whatever your contractor has installed that is tried and true, that they know like the back of their hand. And that it's bulletproof. I don't want to take Joe, the contractor who has 20 years of experience using Red Guard in a bathroom and then hand him over some pieces of Schluter and say, here you go. This is what I want to use because I want Schluter. We can't do that. We don't want you to be the guinea pig.
Right.
Because again, this is an example of a product being really great. But the installation is likely going to lack. So I first start with what that contractor is very familiar with and hasn't been getting callbacks from all of their clients over the past couple of years. And then second part to that is we got to leak test the heck out of it. like stress test those windows, they could put in their form of a bulletproof window flashing. Great. It may differ from, you know, these high performance materials and details that you see all over YouTube and Instagram. But if they've got a method that is tried and true, great. Let's go with that. And then they need, it should be written in their contract that you are going to have it leak tested to ensure and get that their guarantee is holding up. So windows are a great example of that. I wouldn't say get in there with a pressure washer because you could probably make anything leak with that, but get in there and stress test everything. This goes for the bathroom, yes. The windows,
I was gonna say,
the
plumbing.
Roof. Yes.
I love stress testing plumbing and doing the infrared camera screens, right? Like we want to see nothing. Human error is part of building. And I think I'm sure you deal with this too, where a lot of people take or assign blame where it's just human error and stuff happens. And that's why we need to look at the work once it's completed. We need to ensure that it was done correctly. And it isn't always that people are trying to cut corners. It's just that maybe they were having a bad day or forgot that day, you know, the proper assembly. So even stress testing shower pans, that's super simple. And most people don't do that. And then it's hopefully caught in a general home inspection, but sometimes it's not. And then the homeowner has to figure it out. So stressing systems to see how they're performing, making sure that they are performing to especially any water tightness standard like bathrooms and windows that they should be is paramount.
It's so important. And when you look back on it, like in your example of the multifamily home, if that crew would have just taken that one extra day, and really that's all that it is, one extra day to stress test those windows, not only would they have saved themselves as a contractor a tremendous amount of money because now they are getting called back for a failed warranty item, but all of the headache and just having to repair drywall on the interior. Just if you slow it down and you have, you know, either a consultant walking you through things and then you have maybe third-party home inspector coming in to be doing drywall pre-drywall inspection, stress testing the plumbing lines, like just going through methodically step by step each phase of your home to make sure that you get that peace of mind that once everything's closed up, buttoned up, you know, like, okay, that window is not leaking. I stood there for 15 minutes with a garden hose and I couldn't get it to leak. So I can sleep peaceful at night.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. So I wanted to ask, and I do like to ask this question. If you, Megan, could design your dream healthy home, what would it have?
Wow.
What would it look like? What would the dream healthy home look like to you?
Gosh, I've never been asked this question. And what an amazing question. It would have a lot of natural materials. It would have a slab foundation. It would have a killer ventilation system and HVAC system dependent on, you know, the envelope type that I selected. And again, that is, I can't even get into like what my ideal would be because I haven't thought through really that piece of the envelope construction, but it would just be a healing haven, low-tox build, really as natural as possible in terms of material selection. And I know it's boring, but you know, a simple gabled roof, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that's not something that I've been able to entertain in terms of potentially building my own home, but maybe I'm going to start visualizing it.
Wow. Yeah. Visualize it. One day it'll happen. And then when it is, you're going to have all this
thought. I know.
And start planning now. Well, thank you so much for coming on and really sharing your story. I didn't even know we were going to get into that, but that was so helpful and really therapeutic for so many, I'm sure, because going through failed rentals is way too common. And I think you really gave some insight in how that can be successful in the end, because ultimately you stayed.
That's the truth, right? And ultimately I healed here.
Yeah.
you know, and a lot of people who hear my story are, you know, incredulous that I stayed. And not only did I not really have another option, but I wanted to have faith that this could be a problem that could be corrected. And that ultimately became a foundation too for me in advising and in clients that things are fixable. You don't always need to flee. And it can get really scary. And I really want to validate that when people are having building related illness, microbial issues in the home that are affecting their health. I deeply understand that. But really giving it as much thought as possible to make the most informed and the best decision and a plan to get the answers you need to make a decision, like an inspection, right?
Yeah.
Really benefits you in so many ways that if, you know, you're coming from that position of, oh my gosh, you know, we have X, Y, and Z, we had this leak, we know we have mold, we have to make an immediate decision. I can just say from personal experience and professional experience that really taking a step back and having faith that things will work out one way or another, getting a great team together, whether that's consulting with somebody who can really give you insight into hopefully what's going on and help interpret your testing, help interpret this data for you to make the best decision for you and your family. I can't recommend it enough. And there's so much hope. There's so much hope.
There is hope. That is the takeaway for today. There is hope.
There is.
Everyone has hope. Whether you're in a rental like Megan or you are, you know, in your existing home having to navigate all of that. So there's hope for everybody. So thank you again so much for being here. We cannot wait to have you on again because I know you have so much more to share about. So we will have to plan that. But thank you again for sharing your knowledge. I really, really enjoyed this. So everyone, thank you for being here. Reviews, ratings, follows, those are also helpful for this podcast so that Megan can come back again. So thank you again for being here, and we will see you on the next episode.
Thank you.